Hi, my name is Curtis Poe, and I want to talk to you today about bringing modern object-oriented programming into the Perl Core. First of all, I want to thank all of you for joining us at FOSDEM 2021. It's been a fascinating year that we've had to go through with the pandemic and everything, and attending a virtual conference with me presenting remotely and I can't actually interact with my audience directly is an interesting challenge, but I hope you'll bear with me as I try to deal with how things are going. You'll notice when I talk about bringing OO to the Perl Core that I've spelled this C-O-R. That's because of something that I'll explain in just a moment, but I want you to know that's not actually a typo. As for myself, I'm Curtis Bowe, but online is Ovid to many folks. I'm with allaroundtheworld.fr. We're a consulting firm, and we specialize in building complex software for people. And building bespoke teams that fit what the company actually needs, as opposed to we have three people on hand who might or might not be able to do what you want, and we'll just toss them at you. You can follow me at Twitter on OvidPerl, or you can just email me at ovid@allaroundtheworld.fr. You can also check out TauStation.space, which is the narrative MMORPG that we've been building. Absolutely fantastic. It's a lot of fun to play. It's for people who like reading rather than just the beautiful graphics. But if you're blind or if you have limited mobility, you'll discover that it's very easy to play, very easy to follow along in a way that a few other games are, because we think that's important. The morality of that is important, being accessible to everyone. But enough of that. I want to talk about Core. And when I first came up with the idea of bringing modern object-oriented programming to the Perl Core, this wasn't initially me. Stephen Little had been doing a lot of work on this before that. He's one who wrote Moose, for example. But he wanted to do something even better and have truly modern object-oriented programming available. But he'd been working on it for a long time by himself, and I think he kind of got burnt out, to be honest. So I picked up the baton, and I was trying to figure out what's the smallest thing that I could put together that the Perl 5 Porters, P5P, might accept. And the Sawyer, the pumpkin for Perl 5 Porters, came to me and said, don't think about that. Don't worry about the implementation. Build excellence. And then later, when I found out about the Perl 7 project, I realized I was thinking too small. I was thinking within the confines of what Perl currently does, and I wasn't thinking about what it could do. So Core now is my attempt to keep something which is like Perl, but a little bit more. Terminology, be aware that when I talk about slots, I'm talking about basically the places where the data for an object is stored. Currently in Perl, we tend to use something called a blessed hash reference. So the key value pairs would be the slots where we store the data. So that's what I'm talking about there. Attributes is a heavily overloaded term in many programming languages, including Perl. In this case, attributes are simply slot modifiers such as reader, writer. They give some additional behavior to the slot, which we'll understand more later. And term Core itself is basically short for Corina. The poet Ovid wrote a lot of love letters to a woman named Corina, love poems, to a woman named Corina. So I just shortened that to Core. But then that hits the problem of we talk about bringing Core to the Core, and people are like, I don't understand. So if you want to just call Core Corina, don't worry about the name, because the name is going away. It just gave me a handle that I can refer to the project by. But Ovid was Italian, so let's talk about something Italian. Pizza. Pizza's wonderful. I live close to the Italian border. Pizza in Italy is amazing, and you want to open up a pizza joint in a town, but they already have a pizza joint. How are you going to beat them? You might think about offering a better pizza. You might think about offering a cheaper pizza, but it turns out the cheaper pizza is a disaster because people associate cheap with poor quality. Economists have known this for a long time. Business experts have known this for a long time. When I sold cars, one of the things they hammered into our heads over and over again is the customers who are happiest with the cars are those who have paid the most money because they're the ones who have been sold the value. And it was true. My happiest customers paid the most for their cars. So you don't want to look at cheap. You don't want to look at price for the pizza you're offering. You're looking at value. Because value is what attracts people. And when we talk about Perl, and we want to talk about the difference between price and value, what's the price of Perl? It's that's got a shallow learning curve for the basics. It's got a steep learning curve when you want to get advanced. So that's something to consider. But no one actually cares. Rust has a steep learning curve. People love Rust. C++ has a steep learning curve. I don't think anyone loves C++, but they can get a job with that very easily. There's lots of languages where you have a very steep price for learning the language, but people appreciate it. Why? Because they get great value. And what's the value of Perl? It's not available jobs anymore. Back when I learned Perl, I could have quit my job every 6 months and gotten a pay rise. Well, I kind of did, because there were jobs everywhere. In the past 15, 20 years, those jobs have dropped tremendously. There's still a lot of them, but not nearly as many as there were. Data science and AI are kind of taking over the software world. Perl doesn't have much to offer there, which is kind of an embarrassment. So that's not the value we're looking for. The CPAN testers, Unicode support, regular expressions, those are great, but those are marginal value for many people. We're not worried about that. Everybody hits OO, either because they want to develop OO software or they have to maintain OO software. OO is an almost universal value for a given programming language. So if you have powerful OO, you offer something which is of tremendous value. So let's not forget about that. So, as a new developer, how do I write object-oriented code in Perl? Well, that's simple. They ask this question, and you tell them, use a CPAN client. What? Okay, use a CPAN client. What does that mean? Well, now I have to learn how to download this extension. That's actually not bad. We're getting more and more used to downloading extensions, even for something that probably should be core to the language, but okay, we'll let that slide. Then they got to pick an OO system. And wait, what do you mean I've got to pick an OO system? No, just pick one of them. And no one has any idea what the heck they're going to pick if they're new to the language. They can't, because they won't have the background. And then finally they pick one and you say, no, not that one. Okay, fine. And then the build fails after 15 minutes because they picked a particular one and they get this obscure error message. Oh, just force the install. Don't worry about it. That's an embarrassment. That is a horrible embarrassment for the language. People shouldn't have to go through that. If they want to install a different object-oriented system to replace the core one, that's absolutely fine. They should be expert enough in the language in order to be able to make that decision, to understand what that means. But not when they're new to the language. Instead, they want to learn how to do OO on Perl, and now they have to learn how to pick which OO system they want to install. Then they have to learn how to install a CPAN client and how to use that to install that OO system, and what happens if they get test failures, and there's too many OO systems to pick from, and no, this is bad. And I am tired, as a consultant, going into clients and, oh, you've written another in-house OO system because what you find in the market is not suitable for you because we don't have something in core. Or they built something long before Moose and now they have settled on that over the years. And I can understand why, but it's frustrating. And Bless is not the value that you were looking for. There's nothing wrong with Bless. If you want to use Bless, that's fine. Not for a brand new developer, because you've got to wire everything together, which means you're going to be creating your own unique set of bugs. We don't need that. OO. So core OO is assembly language for object-oriented programming. We don't need that. Moose and the family of languages changed everything and was great. It gave people an appreciation for better object-oriented programming. But it's not in the core, so it raises the question of what should be. Good enough is not good enough. Most object-oriented systems are incomplete. They're sugar forgetters and setters, and they often offer you a default constructor. And we need to stop treating objects like structs, but that's what we do. It's like, oh, look, it's a data structure with methods you can call on it. That's not what an object is. An object is an expert about the system that it works on, which might be a data structure with methods you can attach to it, but generally shouldn't be. But I'm not going to go into object-oriented design in this talk because we're going to get distracted. Instead of thinking about something that's just good enough, that'll kind of work, we need to be better than. That's very important. We need to be better than what we had. We need to be better than other languages. We need to reach for that gold medal rather than settling for the bare basics or settling for this mess. I am so tired of this. This happens to me all the time. I go into clients and I'm trying to debug performance problems and I'm running my NYT prof and boom, everything coming out of Moose, it slows everything down when it doesn't have to be because it's, well, Moose is third party. It's not core to the language. Good enough is not good enough. We need to stop that. Core wants to add modern OO to the Perl core, making OO easy. But we have the opportunity to build something beautiful, wonderful, more powerful than most languages, but still feel like Perl if we do it right. So I've got a grammar for it. I've got a, here's another grammar for just the methods. The grammar's mostly done. The initial semantics are mostly done. But it's complicated. There's a lot of little corner cases that we have to deal with. So we've got to figure out exactly what we're going to be putting in the MVP to pitch that to P5P to see if they'll accept it. But I want to talk about the design considerations so you know where I'm coming from because I'm the driver behind this. My first and foremost was easy things should be easy and hard things should be possible, which is, that's Perl in a nutshell. That has been Perl for decades. So keep that in mind. I want small systems to be easy to build. Should be trivial, just prototype stuff. But large systems should have a greater safety. I work with many companies who have a 500,000 to 1,000,000+ lines of Perl code. And large systems where you don't offer some sort of safety about the kinds of data that you're working with, they're difficult to work with. They're frustrating to work with. And I have to work with these clients to manage things. So I really want Core to be able to offer them something built in to handle that. Tremendously need to decouple data and accessors and constructors. You'll see a little bit more about that as we go along. We need to encourage smaller interfaces, but there we're talking a little bit more about fundamentals of object-oriented design that I also won't be going into in this talk. But we need to cater to new developers. And you might ask what I mean by a new developer. Do I mean new to Perl or new to programming? I mean both. We want it to be simple. I mean, this is from Moo. Has name is RWP. What's RWP? That's read, write, protected. Okay, fine. What is read, write, protected? In Moose, it's has name and it's got a reader. That's, once you understand it, it's actually pretty easy to follow. It's not complicated. It's not difficult. We want this to be accessible to people who come along. So I've avoided things like colon RWP because I want it to be easy to read. I want it to be accessible to newbies. Paul Graham created ARC to be catered to experts. ARC is dead. You go out to the boards for ARC on development and how to learn ARC, no one's posting them anymore. No one cares because he made a language that was not accessible to the mass of programmers. So Core is very opinionated. Fair warning, this is mostly my opinions. But it is very Perlish. It still feels like Perl, even though we had to extend the language a little bit for this. And it's very practical because it's very easy to write with Core. And you'll see more examples of that later. If you want to contribute to this, be aware you can go to ircperl.org/core or github.com/core. Sorry, the video is covering up that URL. There's a lot of work which is being involved. A lot of different people are being contacted discussing this. But let's get closer into this. I want you to know that all Core syntax that you're about to see is speculative. It's mostly nailed down. What you're seeing is probably the final version. There are some little bits that we're arguing about here and there because we're not sure, but it's pretty close to it. But the data types are for entertainment purposes only. Do not pay attention to them. I put them in there so you can see what the potential future is, but there's problems because data types aren't just for Core. They're also for, you know, a regular bit of Perl code, not object-oriented, just being able to type a variable, or how data types are going to be used in signatures, which Dave Mitchell's been working on. So because types are going to be used in so many areas, and we need to unify how types are used across all those different areas, I pulled types out of the original Core specification because it wasn't appropriate to be there. But let's talk about the evolution of what we've got right now. Specifically, I don't want to talk about blessing a reference. Most of the old timers are familiar with that. Newer developers are less familiar with that. So we'll go ahead and start with this. Moose was first released back in 2006, And you can see right here that we had to import stricken warnings. Is a int, well, that's code which is being invoked right there. But that's mostly what we understand for Moose today. It's very similar to that. Here's a point object in the original version of Moose, and that's going to be important because I'm going to be using this as for later examples so you can see the power of what we're talking about here. Here's Moxie. Stephen Little was a creator of Moose, and he realized there's a lot of limitations of Moose, and he was trying to create something better, core, that we put into the language. Simple and easy, and this is part of what he created with Moxie. And you can see that we're declaring our slots here. We have default values for those slots. We're declaring the accessors for the slots. I won't go into details about the syntax. Here's how you clear those values. This was ugly because it made the assumption of a blessed hash reference, which I think was unfortunate in this case. Core does this. The reason I think this is better is because it's so much simpler. It's easy. We don't have to worry about how it's implemented under the hood. But we're not introducing a lot of complex syntax. We're just declaring our variable slot variables. We say that we can pass it to the constructor. We have readers for both of those, and we can clear them. It's that simple. There's nothing complex about that. So here's Moxie on the left. Here's Core on the right. Exact same thing, just different, cleaner syntax. So Moose was great, but it had some really bad affordances, and a lot of that wasn't Stephen Little's fault. It's limitations of the Perl programming language itself, which he had to work around. So Moose winds up being clumsy for many of the things that we needed. Raku, however, has some great ideas. So I've stolen a lot from Raku, but I needed to have this fit with how Perl worked, because they are different languages. For those of you who are not familiar, Raku used to be called Perl 6, and a lot of people thought it was going to be the successor for Perl, but it's not. So that's what I'm referring to when I talk about stealing some ideas from Raku. So when we talk about Moose, when we declare a slot, we use the has function. And has handles slot declaration, attributes, types, coercion, delegation, clears, predicates, blah, 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 blah. If you want to talk about a hideously overloaded function, this is it. This is exactly the problem we're talking about. It's trying to do too many things, and it gets confusing at times. Core, what does has do for core? Just a slot declaration, that's it. Nothing else. Very simple, very predictable. So let's look at what this actually means. We'll take a simple object, a customer object. It has slots, name, birth date, optional title, doctor, Ms., whatever. And it's got customer methods like full name, or predicate methods, are you old enough to vote, drive, etc. It looked like this in Moose. And you can see here are the slots. Pretty straightforward, title, name, birth date. Here are the various methods that we have. The difference is slots are just dumb pieces of data. You call them, you get your data back. The methods actually do stuff, to keep that simple. Note the slots are all immutable. So RO means read only. What does that actually mean, though? Why is that important? Well, think about this. We have our predicate method, old enough to vote. If Ovid old enough to vote, blah, 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 then we set the birth date to yesterday. Except old enough to vote isn't yesterday, obviously, which means I can have a guard to verify that it is okay to follow this path of code, and then I can set my object to an invalid state, and I can no longer guarantee the correctness of my program. So I throw an exception if I try and modify that. That's why we like one of the reasons we like read-only objects. But because the datetime object in that slot is not read-only, I can grab out my birth date, and then I can set the year to last year, and now I violated my old enough to vote constraint. So it's still a problem. In fact, this is not a theoretical problem. This is a real-world problem. Ricardo Sinias wrote up a great blog article about how this was hurting them on their project. And as a result of that, we had datetime moonpig and datetime x immutable. Some of my clients, what I do when we're using the DBX class ORM, I make sure that when we pull dates out of the database and it gets inflated to a datetime object, I make sure it's inflated to this immutable date time object, so they don't have to worry about that because immutability is important. If I'm passing an object to another function, the object is a reference to data, and that other function modifies that data, I don't necessarily know. So now I've got two different sections of code working on two different sections of data that it thinks are the same, and I can't guarantee correctness. Immutability is what you want. So, of course, as immutability should be the default. But that means default. It's not a guarantee. Sometimes you want mutability. So it's trivial to make it mutable just by adding the writer attribute to the slot. So that's fine. We're not dogmatic, but we do push you in the right direction. Oh, we've got a new business rule. Never refer to customers by their name. Never do that. Refer to them by title plus name if they have a title. Because, you know, Dr. Smith might not want to be referred to as Smith or Brian or whatever. So what we do in our code, we've got this full name method that you can see up there. And the full name method is the title. And if we have a title, then we include the title, or we just have an empty string, and then we concatenate the title to the name. Later, we refer to them by their full name. But, oh, someone's going to call the name method. That might violate our new business rule, and we don't want that to happen. So what do? We actually want the name method to be private. We don't want people to be able to call that method. But we don't want to pass underscore name to new. So what do? We have an init arg of name. It's called underscore name, so it doesn't have a public method, but the init arg is name, which says when you pass it to the constructor, you can use name instead of underscore name. And if you call customer name, you get a method not found exception. Except someone's going to call the underscore name sooner or later. Yes, they will. I see this in code all the time. It's very frustrating. You don't actually want to expose that data. So what do we have? We can say name is bear. Bear means we don't have a getter or a setter for this particular attribute. There's nothing we can do with it aside from passing the constructor. If we need to get the value out of it, though, how do we do that? Because the full name method needs to know what the name was set to. Well, my name equals self meta, get attribute name, get value self. No one does that. No one does that. They don't bother. They just make name public or something like that and hope that people don't abuse it. So init arg bear, those are some clever solutions for this problem that we have, but they're clumsy solutions. We want to avoid those. And the has function in moose and moo, it conflates so many different responsibilities, and we want to eliminate that. And that's part of what core is trying to do. So by default, when you're building an object system, don't expose any of your public data. Don't expose any of your data. Just don't do that. If you have a case where you have to expose it, do that on a case-by-case basis, not rather than just blatantly splatting everything out there. But it's painful to do with Moose. In core, it's easy. So in core, we believe that private data should be easy, and we don't encourage promiscuous data. That's a very important design principle behind this. So here's how we do this in core. Notice our class customer, we have a name, title, birth date. None of these have a reader. You can't read those from outside the code because there's no need to do that. But we do have a name method, and we just return the title. And if there's a title, title plus name, otherwise just a name. We have a predicate methods because we don't need to expose the data. Please keep that in mind. It's important. Attributes. So attributes. I hate the term because it's so terribly overloaded. Attributes in Moose are often the name that people use for the slot data. But sometimes they can be very expensive to calculate this data. But what if they only need to be calculated once? So, for example, the 3,000th Fibonacci number only needs to be calculated once. And then that's fine. But we have other things like, let's take an example of volume. We have a box object with height.